to you? I've heard some people, sometimes when things get tight, say, Lord, give me grace. You know what that really meant? Should I interpret it for you? It was kind of a way of saying, Lord, help me to not get out of hand because I'm about to have somebody get on my last nerve. I told the home folks once, if you saved, you should never have to say that. Not in that way. You think about that as you go through this life and recognize that the Lord does much for us as we go along the way. I want to ask a question. What does it mean to sanctify? Set apart? Cleanse, all right. You don't know where I'm going, do you? One thing I've kind of noticed as time has gone by, people tend to want a salvation where they don't have to work. And I've been telling them, and not just me at home, but Brother Fari's had at least one Bible study lesson where he's let us know you have to work. There are no lazy saints. And you have to have your heart in it. I'm mindful. Son was took a test about a week or so ago for the apprentice lineman. And a lot of people would like to do that job because it pays really good money. At least I call it good money. But they will tell you when you're in training that if you're just here for the money, you won't make it through the program. And it's a 5-year program. You get graded every day. And they tell you that you have to really want to do this. I've seen some linemen, they have a sticker on their truck or vehicle, and it'll say, lineman, it's a way of life. See, it's not just a job, it's a way of life to them in a lot of cases. And you and I have to stop and consider salvation is a way of life. And we are supposed to sanctify the Lord in this life. In the midst of everything that we meet along the way, we are to sanctify him. Now, you can't cleanse him. No. Okay, and you can't do things for the Lord in the way that we normally think of him sanctifying us. But let's turn to the 20th chapter of Numbers. I want to start with the first verse. It states here, then came the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, into the desert of Zin in their first month, and the people abode in Kadesh. And Miriam died there and was buried there. And there was no water for the congregation. And they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And the people chode with Moses and spake, saying, would God that we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. And why have ye brought up the congregation of the Lord into this wilderness, that we and our cattle should die there? And wherefore have ye made us to come up out of Egypt to bring us in unto this evil place? It is no place of seed or of figs or of vines or of pomegranates. Neither is there any water to drink. And Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And they fell upon their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto them. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take the rod and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, and it shall give forth his water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock, so thou shalt give the congregation and their beasts drink. Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of the rock? And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice. And the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts also. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, because ye believe me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring the congregation into the land which I have given them.
59.
You think about that. Now, I've told the home folks, sometimes I feel sorry for Moses when I see this. But the Lord is right and just in all his dealings. But let's just be honest. And again, I'm going to make the reference. Tell the home folks you should read your Bible through. And I tell them the more I endeavor to read it, the more I conclude that we are just like the children of Israel. Hard-headed, hard-hearted, tough to deal with, provoking. And many a times, the poor pastor trying to be in a place where they don't get in trouble with God, and yet they have to deal with his people. Now, you can take that however you will. But I'm also mindful, Brother Farr was teaching another Bible study lesson, and he said, wouldn't it be something if every single person in the congregation was all out for God, all out, not, I'm not talking about trying to get out and win other people to Christ, but I'm just talking about following the Lord and living to all they know and understand. And I've thought about that from time to time. I've thought about it for a long time because I remember Brother Lewis Williams was having to deal with some issues. And he made a comment in Bible study one time. He said, I wish everybody was a preacher. I thought when he said it, I thought to myself as a young person, what he's saying is he wished everybody else could deal with some of these problems. Then they find out it's not so easy to deal with. And he would get a chance then to maybe sit back, watch them deal with it, and then point out everything they were doing wrong. But may God help us as we go through this life. But consider, as you look here, and don't just look at the fact that Moses hit the rock twice when he was supposed to just speak to it. But look at some of the things that were going on here and consider that here they are out in this area. They have no water. But the Lord tells Moses to take this rod, gather everybody together, and speak to the rock, and it'll give forth his water. But when Moses did what he did, this is the Lord's conclusion. Because you believed not, and you did not sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel. What you find here, at least in part, is that the Lord gave symbols to remind the children of Israel of a number of things. The rod and the miracles that they saw were done for them to see who he really is. And they were to remember what he had done. It wasn't just Moses that brought them out of the land of Egypt. And I suspect that if they had determined that I'm not going, he wouldn't have been striving with them to get them to go. You want to stay here, you can stay here, but the rest of us have got to move on. But you see, they didn't stay there, did they? When the chance came to go, they was leaving right with everybody else, and then they have the nerve to say, you brought us out here. And last I checked, he did not have a gun or a spear poking everybody and prodding them along for them to go. So may God help us as we go through this life. You consider they failed to remember what God had done. Sometimes it almost seems like they forgot it as quickly as it happens. And in some ways, you might would even want to conclude that it seems God wasted his work on them. But then they miss some other things as well. You consider that to sanctify means to make holy, to consecrate. You and I are to consider that God is holy and I need to look at him in that way. There's so many things going forth in the world today, and it has been going on even since back in their time, where Satan tries to deal with people where they won't see God in the way that they should see him. You consider that, yes, to sanctify is to purify or to free from sin, but he gives us a salvation that is pure. And we are, as the writer said, keep this man. That means to maintain it in the same condition that you received it in. Keep it pure as you go through this life. You consider that what they had before them would impart religious sanctions to them, where they could see this is a God who is alive, who is well, who does care for us and sees about us. You recognize to sanctify him means that I will reverence him in the way that I really ought to. I should reverence him in the way that his being demands. Yeah. You know, there are some people I've worked with, and you might hear somebody say, well, there's something about the way they carry themselves that it demands your respect. God's far beyond any man. And so you and I need to stop and consider as we go through this life. Sometimes we get like the children of Israel, where we think we're dealing with the ministers. You're not dealing with them. You're dealing with God. And they're just doing their best to be an instrument because God called them. I told someone a while back, he's talking about some things and mentioned ordination. And I told him, I hold my ordination like this. I said, some people feel like, oh, I've been ordained, I'm somebody. I said, all that ordination tells me is that I'm nobody. And I hold it real lightly. And if they said, give it up, I hand it back quicker than they blink an eye, because I don't have to get up to say anything in front of anybody. May God help us as we go along the way. Sometimes I've seen where older ministers got kind of lifted up, and you look at that and you see the results, and it tells me, do not be like that. And that does not sanctify God when we are in the assembly of his people and they see some things. And you have to recognize that ministers don't always do everything just perfectly right. And the Lord will sure leave it where people can see it, and they'll let you know about it. But may God help us as we go along the way. In those instances, we have to sanctify the Lord. I thought about the brother he testified the other night, how the Lord dealt with him, and he went back and did what the Lord told him to do. That is sanctifying God. That is living before him as I should and obeying him as I go through this life in all matters along the way. You consider we are to treat God with the reverence, and in doing so, we set him apart and beyond everybody else and everything else as we go through this life. Moses and Aaron, it seems, did not truly believe God was going to get water out of that rock. And even then, he failed to truly listen. And he said, must we get water for you all? Must we fetch the water? It wasn't them. It was God. And so they put a focus upon themselves that should not have ever been there. So he said, you did not sanctify me before them. You did not acknowledge me in a way that they could see I am a God who can do anything. You and I could look at that and you think, go find the biggest rock you can find. I see some of the rock climbers down there in Chatsworth, and there's some pretty big boulders. Can you imagine water coming out of that rock to feed over 6 million people? But see, God can do that. And so you and I need to stop and consider. Moses and Aaron missed obeying the Lord, and they had some doubt apparently from the way God looked upon it. The people themselves missed a lesson to apply to their own lives. They looked at what took place. Had Moses done what God had instructed him to do, then the people would have had to conclude, this is God. Nobody else can do this. But when he said, must we? And I'm still mindful, I laugh about it, but Sister Ava, as I mentioned before, one of the parents that volunteered to come and help her was working, and she told her, she said, the job I have is unstable, and the hours I work keeps me away from my family, and I want to be there for my family, you know, little children growing up and whatnot. And so Sister Ava said, well, we're going to pray about that. And it wasn't very long after that that some of the people there in the office saw the work this lady was doing, and they offered her a full-time position to work for the school district. And so she's working there right now. And she told Sister Ava, she said, when you do that, it's like magic. And she started saying, no, it's not me. That is God working. That was God that did that. And so as we go on in this life, you and I have to recognize it's really a careful place to be in to sanctify God in your life every day, in all that we do as we go along. You see here, they failed at that point. And, you know, you look upon it, and it's like, Lord, as I've read that at times, though, Father, I know you're just, I know you do everything right, but Lord, you were put out with them enough that you told Moses, step aside, I'm gonna wipe them out, I'll just raise you up some people from these rocks. And he's like, Lord, if you do that, they're gonna say that you brought them out here just to kill them because you couldn't take them over. And now Moses, who said, I didn't ask for these people to be put on my shoulders, I didn't ask for all of this. And then when he did what he did, the Lord said, you're not going over to the promised land. You and I have to consider as we go through this life, God can do a lot, and they missed an opportunity to see what he could do in his way. Now, they did have an opportunity to see that even though Moses didn't carry his instructions out fully, God still brought water out of the rock so they could drink and not die of dehydration and whatnot out there. But you and I, sometimes if we're not careful, we will miss some things that God is doing in our lives. And when you look upon it, and I've been talking about this murmuring and complaining, because one of the things murmuring and complaining does is give you tunnel vision, where you don't see all that's really going on. You get self-centered, you get focused upon yourself, and it's just as bad as when somebody else gets lifted up in pride. And neither one of them, most people as a rule, don't want to be around anybody that is either way. So may God help us to live as we should. You see that the Lord was there to bless and undertake for them. And so it is even with us today in all of the things. And you think about what he does for us as we go through this life and recognize that God is trying to work in the lives of each and every one, and whatever he does, he is going to bless and undertake. You may not see all of the blessings. You might recognize that you're in a similar situation as someone else, and they seemingly are blessed more than you, but don't look at them. You look at God and recognize that he said he'd work all things together for good to them that love the Lord. Isaiah, the 8th chapter, starting with the 10th verse. Here we find Isaiah, he had a task that most people really wouldn't want to do. a lot of what he said to the children of Israel brought forth judgment unto them. And we pick up at this point, it says, take counsel together and it shall come to naught. Speak the word and it shall not stand, for God is with us. You consider there are many things that happen. And sometimes there were those who came against the children of Israel, but God had said what he was going to do, and he performed that, and it came to pass. There were other times where the Israelites turned away from God, and he sent his prophets to give them the news that you have turned away from him, and therefore the Lord has determined that he's going to do whatever it was, whatever he pronounced upon them judgment-wise, and they found that it would take place. And so he says, for the Lord spake thus to me with a strong hand and instructed me that I should not walk in the way of this people, saying, say ye not a confederacy to all them to whom this people shall say, a confederacy, neither fear ye their fear, nor be afraid. Sanctify the Lord of hosts himself, and let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. You think about the things that we meet in this life, and we encounter a lot of things where, as we look upon the Lord, we have to make a decision. Am I going to follow God, or am I going to cave in? Am I going to bend this way or that way, or will I just listen to the voice behind me that says, this is the way, walk ye in it. Don't turn to the left, don't turn to the right. Just keep on going that way. You know, many times, though, people don't want to stick out like sore thumbs, do they? So they'll try to flex, they'll try to bend so I don't stick out so much. They said, don't walk the way of those people. The Lord knows where he's leading each one of us. He knows how he's leading each one of us. And when you and I consider, he should be our fear. He should be our dread. We should fear and recognize sometimes people get caught up in themselves to where they feel like, I'm so confident. I know what the Lord wants. And that's not what the Lord wants. And we get in trouble. And I've seen some things as I've come down along the way, and I don't claim to be an old person, but I've seen a few things where when I saw what was taking place, I was like, Lord, I don't know where you are on this circumstance and these situations, but I do not want to be on the side that is opposing you. So I need some instruction on what you would have me to do. Everybody else can go do what they want to, but I want to know where you are, because when you come sweeping through, I do not want to be in the way. If I put it in simple terms, even as a child, I had a sibling, seemed like, I told him one day, I said, you seem to like to get with me. And I don't understand that, because I didn't like getting them. And when I say a whipping, I don't mean two or three licks either. My mother would light you up. And she was a Baptist, okay? Sometimes people say, well, the saints this, the saints that. Home folks have heard me talk about it. And she was not a big woman either. She did good to weigh 100 pounds, and I mean that literally. Usually she was around 99, 98. And yet she carried a mean switch, and I've seen her use it on my other brothers and sisters. And I caught some of it, and I finally decided it's just not very smart to do what you're going to do, get the whooping you're going to get, and then have to do what they told you to do in the first place. Just do it and be done with it and save yourself the beat. And one of my siblings just couldn't get that through their head. And even when you try to give them advice, you know, how the old folks, they give you a whooping and say, now hush. Maybe yours didn't do you that way. And we used to always wonder, well, when you light us up like you do, what else can we do but holler? And then you tell us to hush. Well, another old sister told me that was another part of your punishment. I'm like, oh, okay, I never thought about it like that. But I remember telling one of my siblings, when my mother got him and told him to hug, I said, go outside, go in the backyard where she can't hear you, and then you can, you know, kind of do what you're going to do. And they wouldn't do it, just sit there stubborn as could be. And my mother come back through, oh, you still making noise? Let me give you something to make some noise for. And now you got two wings. But may God help us. Sometimes we can be that way when we're dealing with God. And we don't really truly sanctify him in our life where people can see what you're doing. Now, I've mentioned this before, but you know what happened when COVID first hit? And question came up whether we was going to still have church. Well, we kept having church. And there was a reason for that. Didn't broadcast it, but some would say, are we going to have service? Yeah, we'll be there. Now, I do remember one brother said, when I deal with people through the week, I need to come and recharge my batteries. Like, well, there's one reason on top of the other as to why we should have it. But here's the point. I remember some of the people at work asked me, are you all still having church? Yeah, we still have a church. And one day they said, well, now you know what the governor said. And you know you're supposed to do this and that and the other. And we're in our morning meeting, so all of the men are in there and the engineer and superintendent, others, you know. And before I could think of anything to say, the engineer spoke up and he laughed. He said, Paul's gonna go to church. He don't care what anybody says. And I never spoke to him about church. The only thing I could figure that he drew that from was the fact that when we had our shutdowns, many times they'd have work on Sundays. We start a shutdown on Monday. We might not finish it until that following Tuesday or Wednesday, 8 or 9 days later. And so on Sunday, everybody was working. But what would I do? Well, I'd come in at 6. I'd work till about 10. I'd head to church. And then depending on how long they was going to stay, I might come back to work and help them finish up for the day and then turn around and go back to church for Bible study. And they would see that, well, he might miss them few hours while he's gone, but he's gone. And so he said, Paul, quit going to church when they peeled his cold, dead fingers off of the handle of the door. And everybody started laughing. I had to laugh too. But he wasn't putting me down, but he had come to see church is the big thing with him, which is another way of saying God gets put first. And all this other, you know, yeah, they was making the money, you know, double time and whatnot. And you missing out. But you know something? I've never heard anybody that passed away. And I've known some people that would work hard. But I've never heard any of them on their deathbed say, I wished I'd have worked one more hour overtime. I wished I'd have worked one more day of overtime. In fact, one told me once, I thought I needed all of this, and I found out I didn't. So may God help us. We are to put him first. We are to sanctify him in our lives, and he is to be our fear and our dread. We are to live in such a way, and you think about this as you go along. We sometimes, I guess, because it seems like God is way out there and you can't physically see him looking at you right then and there, we tend to not take it as seriously as we are. But you think about it. And I look at it somewhat in this way. Again, my mother and my father, he would light you up too, as soft-spoken as he was. When he got you, and I've told people, California used to have, maybe they still do that, law about 3 times and then you're out. Well, he had that way before they ever thought about it. And if you understood what was going on, the first time you got out of hand, he might say, all right, fella, that was strike one. The next time he said, all right, fella, you about to run out, that was strike two. And it might have been 2 or 3 weeks between strike one and strike two, but he hadn't forgot. And then when you finally did get in trouble, well, he'd remind you of them other 2 times that you stepped out of line. And now you're getting a whooping for all 3 offenses. And so you consider, as we go through this life, you had a certain dread to where when they weren't around, you still would not act up because somehow they might hear something about it. And as I've told them, I had a prejudiced teacher in geometry my sophomore year of high school. And when they went to talk to him, he said I was disrupting the class, putting my feet up on the desk and doing all kinds of things. And I didn't even know they'd come to school to talk to him. But I found out when I got home, because when I opened up the screen door, they opened up the other door. My mother and father both were standing in the door, shoulder to shoulder, said, we want to know why you acting a fool in school. Never even let me in the house. I'm standing on the front porch trying to keep from getting executed. Trying to explain once I finally figured out what they were talking about. And it took a while to convince them that I wasn't doing all of that. But I say that from the standpoint that you had a certain dread. And I'm mindful too that there came a time where a list was going around at the school and they was pointing out who was an Uncle Tom. And I'm gonna boil it down like this. If you were making good grades, if you were getting along with people, regardless of their skin color, you wasn't black enough. And so they had you on the list. And somebody even told me, said, you might as well take a look because your name is on there too. And they mentioned about the grades. And I said, well, you know what? I know how to make bad grades. I said, but I wonder if they'll come home with me and I'll make the bad grade and they take the whooping that I would get for making the bad grades. I said, I don't think they can stand the whooping. May God help us as we go along. So in other words, I had a certain awe, a certain dread to realize that if I get out of hand at school, somebody's going to get out of hand with me when I get home. And you know, as you and I go along in this life, it really doesn't matter if somebody's there with you. You know when you're not doing the right thing. You know when you don't handle it in the right way. Let God be your fear and your dread. And it'll keep you out of a whole lot of trouble. Sometimes I've thought about that when you're thinking about being tempted on something and think, he's watching me. I'm talking about God. He's watching me. So instead of me thinking that, well, I'm getting away because my mother didn't see it, my father didn't see it, none of my siblings saw it, so they can't tell on me and whatnot, then I can get away with this. There's no saints around, but he's watching. And so it's like, not going to do that. Y'all can do what you want to. I'm going the other way. May the Lord help us as we go through this life. He is to be our fear and our dread as we go in this way, and it is so that we can live a life that exonerates him, that shows people this is the way you live. You recognize what's going on, and many will see things, and there's going to be opportunities to do wrong. I've told the home folks, I had an old man at work. He said, Phil, you could do this, you could do that, you could do the other, and there's 3 or 4 other guys standing right there listening to him, and he said, listen to me, I'm an old guy, I've been around, and you can do this here, you can do that there. And finally, all I could do was point straight up in the sky and say, he said, don't do it. And this was a person professing to be a Christian. And when I said that, he said, okay, I got to leave you alone now, I can't mess with that. But, you know, I told him, no, you don't do those kind of things. I said, that'll follow you home. Yeah, but you can listen to me and you want to do that? That's you. But I'm not getting caught that way. I tell home folks sometimes that sometimes when I say some things, I'm trying to get it off of me and onto you, and you can do what you will with. But when it comes to the things that people make judgment on, I tell them my biggest job is to keep me clean. And I know people are watching because I had somebody tell me once that, well, we don't have anything on you. And I thought, well, that means they've been looking. May God help us. I've seen some other things where people come along and they ask somebody else. They didn't come and ask me. They asked somebody else who didn't tell me. I got asked, where do you stand? I told them, you tell them I stand redeemed. Not on anybody's side. So may the Lord help us as we go through this life. 1 Peter, 3rd chapter, 12th verse. It says, for the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. And who is he that will harm you if you be followers of that which is good? But and if ye suffer for righteousness' sake, happy are ye, and be not afraid of their terror, neither be troubled. But sanctify the Lord God in your hearts, and be ready always to give an answer to every man that asketh you a reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear, having a good conscience, that whereas they speak evil of you as of evildoers, they may be ashamed and falsely accuse your good conversation in Christ. Sanctify the Lord God in your heart. Be ready to give anyone an answer as to why you live the way you do, why you have the hope that you have, but do it with meekness and with fear. I worked with the man there at the plant. And there was another man that worked there as well. And this second person, he was over the operators. But the first guy that I worked with, he worked on maintenance crew like I did. And he told me, he said, when I first gave my life to Christ, he named this man Tom and another. And he said, they began to talk to me about the Lord. He said, but all they did was put scriptures on me to put me down. And they just pointed out all of my shortcomings and whatnot. And I'm just barely getting started trying to learn how to live for the Lord. And when he spoke that to me, I finally told him, I said, well, you know, none of us have anything to brag about. Whatever we get from God, it came from God. We didn't get it on our own. And we are not to be in a place where we have a holier than thou attitude. A lot of people have that perception because of what they've encountered in this life. And I found out it don't matter where you are. When I was a supervisor there in Wichita, I remember hearing a man, his name was Stan, and he said, well, that's what I say about them Christians. They got their holier than thou attitude. And I finally spoke up and says, well, a true Christian can't have a holier than thou attitude because they know they don't have anything to be holier than thou about. Many years later, I end up at the plant out here. And again, I heard someone say, well, so-and-so, he said this and he said that. He's just got a holier than thou attitude. That's why I don't like people that say they're Christians, and I'm standing there. Now, I never told them I was one, but they figured that out pretty quick. And again, I had to tell them, I'm not trying to judge. I said, but when it says, thou shalt not judge, that don't mean what a lot of them want to put on you, because he also said, judge righteous judgment. And so I let them know, I'm just going to tell you that you have nothing to be holier than thou about. So a true Christian realizes that, and they humble themselves before the Lord, and they just go on and live their life. They don't try to act like they're way above you and look down their nose, and it don't matter where they are in life. If you go out and deal with some homeless person on the street, you don't look down your nose at them, because there for the grace of God goes you. If you are in other places where people are not doing so well, you don't look down your nose at them and treat them like they're nobody. That is not God. You never saw Jesus do that. Who did you see Jesus with? You saw him with the lepers. He ain't supposed to be around them, and they're supposed to warn you and say, unclean, unclean. Like, don't get too close to me. You touch me, you unclean. You see, when He said, Lord, if you will be healed. He said, I will. And he touched them and they were clean. And he said, go and let the priest know. Do what you need to do to let the priest know. And he went on. May God help us as we go through this life. We are to sanctify God in our hearts, and we are to do it in the eyes of others where they can see there's a true example of what it means to be a Christian in your heart. And be ready to give an answer. You know, we are to have a good conscience. We are to, in other words, live a life of conduct in such a way that it is always of a good conscience. That doesn't mean everybody's going to see you that way. We had to deal with my dad's estate. There were some things said, got spread it far and wide. And when it come out here, somebody hit me up about it. And even there, somebody else hit me up about it. But I told the person there in Wichita, which was a young person, they said, well, I heard this and I heard that, and I decided to come and get it straight from the horse's mouth. What do you have to say? And I just told him, I said, look, I'm not gonna put my siblings' business in the street. I said, but I have records where I could tell you where every penny went. And I could also show that I took care of some things that I wasn't supposed to take care of. The attorney even told me, well, you did this and you did that. Why did you do that? I said, because I knew that's what my father would want me to do. Even though I knew that the other siblings could holler about it. And if they did, then I would have to dig in my own pocket and pay for all of it. But I knew this is how he wants things done. And so that's what I did. But I found that every now and then that comes up. I've seen people ask questions trying to dig in your business. I tell them the same thing. I'm not putting my siblings' business in the street. But I got records where I can show you every penny, where it went, what day it went out, who it was for, or what it was for, and start from the beginning, go all the way to the end. And kept records in such a way that when I handed it over to the attorney so he could close out probate and all of that, he called me at work one day and said, you got too much information here. I said, you told me to keep records. I kept records. Now, how you deal with it is up to you, but I got the record. And so you are to live in such a way. And I even had a phone call where somebody called and they told my wife, well, they're saying this about you, they're saying that about you, and they're saying the other. And I happened to come through from the kitchen. I'd come in to get some water to drink before I went out and finished cutting my yard. And she stopped me and said, well, they're saying this, this, and this. I said, oh, let them say what they want to say. And they said, well, this could hurt your ministry. I said, if that's all the ministry I got, I don't have none. And so you go on. But you know what I found? When you live where you have what he's talking about here, people can say all manner of things against you. But if you leave it alone and let God deal with it, instead of getting all out of hand, if you sanctify God in your heart, when he gets through dealing with it, none of it will stick to you. And you won't have to get blood on your hands trying to get it off of you. So may God help us as we go through this life. We are to sanctify him. And I want to share what one writer had to say about some of this. He says, sanctify God, the Lord God, in your heart. He said, in your hearts, in other words, or in the affections of the soul, regard the Lord God as holy and act toward him with that confidence, which a proper respect for one so great and so holy demands. Do you stop and think about how great and how holy God is? Think about that. If you do, you'll be less likely to step out and do something you shouldn't do. May the Lord help us as we go along the way. You consider to sanctify him in our hearts means to esteem or regard him as a holy being in contrast from all those feelings which rise up in the heart against him, the feelings of complaining and murmuring under his dispensations. You know, people murmuring, complaining as if God's a really harsh, mean God. But he's not. We are to esteem him holy everywhere that we go. We are to act toward him as holy. That is, we are to obey his laws. We are to yield to all of his requirements because they are just and good. We are to speak of him as holy in opposition to the language of disrespect and irreverence so common among mankind. You hear a lot of things said nowadays that are disrespectful to God. It didn't just start now. And when you think about some of these writings were written hundreds of years ago, and they were talking about the disrespect that people spoke of God with, and you look around in this world today and you hear it more and more, and if you're not careful, you know, sometimes you can be around people and they're cursing and the swearing, and it seems like it gets lodged in your brain. You're like, Lord, I didn't need to hear all of that today. And I found that there are times where they might give me a job to do and they'd say, do you need a trainee to go with you? No, I really don't need one today. Like, I just want to have some peace and quiet. I want to have to talk to nobody. May God help us as we go along the way. We are to consider him and sanctify him in our lives so that we flee to him when we are in trouble. As opposed to withholding our hearts from him and flying to other sources for help in this life. We are to stop and consider, this is a holy God. They sing that song, I have been blessed. And I sometimes have considered just how blessed have you been. You know, I told them sometimes I go for a walk. And if I follow my route on through, I'll walk about 5 1/4 miles. And once I take off, I gotta finish it because I drive from my house to a certain place as my starting point. So if I wanna get back home, I gotta come all the way back to the car and then drive home. But a lot of times as I'm walking, I'm thinking about the things that you see in this world, some of the things that you hear about, And as you go through this life, it's like, Lord, help me. I haven't made heaven my home, but I can say I have been blessed. Yeah. And sometimes, as I told my first wife, I said, you never preach the same message twice. You might use the same scriptures, but you use different analogies or whatever. And it's like, well, I've used what comes to me. But one of the things I've mentioned to her, I said, especially when I have my own gardens, I do the best preaching to myself. I don't know what the other people think. I've had somebody one time tell me, I don't get anything out of what you say. Well, that's up to them and the Lord. But I tell her sometimes the best preaching I've ever done, I did to myself. And it's just me and the tomatoes and the cabbage, the weeds and whatever else was out there at the time, the mosquitoes. But may the Lord help us as we go through this life. We are to see God in a way where we recognize just how much have we been blessed as we've gone through this life. We are to sanctify him in our hearts as opposed to having a mere outward form of devotion. In our prayers, in our hymns, we are to ascribe holiness to our Maker. And yet he says, consider how much of this is mere language of form. How little does the heart accompany it? And even in the most solemn and sublime ascriptions of praise, how often are the feelings of the heart entirely at variance with what is expressed by the lips? You know what that means? People say something with their lips, but the heart is far from it. And it's not just people out in sin. May God help us. Now, I understand how we are, but sometimes I tell the home folks, I say, well, you say heaven holds all to you. Be singing that song, you know, feeling it and singing it slow and all that kind of stuff. And then it's like when you got a chance to go to heaven, you're struggling and all you're worth to stay here. Think about what you're saying. Think about when you're going in this life, and then we look at something like Sister Juanima Clay or Sister Sarita, and they're like, as one brother told me one day, he said, well, it seemed like your wife had no fear of death. And I told the home folks, there was a security guard where I used to work, and he caught me one day and had me pull over, and he started asking me questions about her passing away. And he asking me all kinds of questions, do you miss her, and this and that and the other, and I'm answering him, and finally, it just wasn't fitting together for him. And he's like, I can't wrap my mind around it. I said, like, she was running to what everybody else is running from. I said, you got to understand, though, seeing Jesus was her ultimate goal. And when she had the chance to go, and I said, she told me before we'd been married 3 months, I'll be gone before you will. I used all kind of excuses to say, stick around for a little while. Don't you want to see your children get married? Nope, don't need to see all of that. And he even told me, said, well, wasn't that kind of selfish on her part? So you got to understand where she's coming from. And he just couldn't. He went home and told his girlfriend about it. He come back and said, well, she couldn't grasp it either. And it's like, but you got to understand. She wanted to see the Lord. And so what she was saying with her lips was in accord with what was in her heart. I want to see him. And I want to see him whenever I can, as soon as I can. And so you consider, sometimes even as the writer says, we will say something, but our heart's really not in it. And I remember my sister, we would look at the words of the song, but that song, After Calvary, it said, take my hand, lead me through darkest valleys. Command, and I will go across the sea. Lord, take my life and mold it the way you'd have it be. I'd do anything after Calvary. We started learning that song, and she spoke up one day. She said, I can't sing this song. Said, I'm not there. And we decided, all right, then we'll just put it to the side until everybody is there. And I think we went for like well over a year, maybe a couple of years or so. And finally, one day, and we was all practicing with my dad, and she said, I can sing that song now. But you see, you need to stop and consider it. And part of why she looked at it that way, and I'm telling the home people, my dad made us go to Bible schools, and we went to a school that Mrs. Elliott had called the Good News Club, but she was not a singer. So she had Mrs. Dates teach us the Bible school song. But I remember Mrs. Dates, she told us one day, she said, y'all need to be careful about what you're singing, because you could sing a lie as well as talk a lie. And I still remember that to this day. And it's like, I'm not saying don't sing, all right? But think about what you are saying. Yeah, and recognize the message that is in the song. And recognize that I am to sanctify God in my life, where what I say matches up with what I'm doing to where he's pleased with. Where it shows that I am acknowledging him and I am recognizing him and realize that it is holiness when it is all said and done. You know, you consider man as he is, he dreads danger, he dreads sickness, he dreads death, he dreads going out into eternity. And there are other things that will happen, and we get along with the affairs of our life when it looks like we're going to go bankrupt. We get along when a friend is sick and they're about to die. We get stirred up if our country was to ever get invaded. And some people are getting pretty concerned about what Putin is saying. But may the Lord help us. What we need to understand is when we sanctify God in our lives, when we have the proper affections towards him, we are delivered from all of these alarms. That's why the songwriter said, I'm living by faith and I feel what? No alarm. How do you get there? By sanctifying God in his heart. And so you and I are to have that same kind of experience as we go along the way. We are to sanctify him because God is our refuge. We are to regard the Lord as holy. And when I say that, that means that Anytime I think about him being holy, then I have to consider that he is just, he is right, he is good in all things. And you and I have to see him in that way. Then we can flee to him in all of the trials of life. We can rest and repose in his arm in the hour of death. We come to realize that riches and honors and earthly friends, none of them can save us from all of these things that we meet in this life. But we have a God who takes care of us and is alive and well as we go through this way. And it also then shows us that this religion is a spiritual thing, that it elevates man, that it is pure, that it is God-like. We are to dwell with God. We are to walk with God. We are to commune with God. We are to be like God. Brother Charles was singing that song, to be like Jesus. I remember one person one time when my mother-in-law was trying to deal with them, and she told me and my mother-in-law, but I'm not Jesus. Well, didn't that tell you where you need to go? That tells you what you need to be busy working on. So may the Lord help us as we go through this life. I think about the songwriter. He wrote that song, said, holy, 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 Lord God Almighty. And I remember we sung that song as a group. We put it on a CD. And I thought about it when those flaming air angels said they flew with two wings to cover their feet, two more wings to cover their face, and two to fly with, because God was so holy. And they, even though they are angels, had such an awe and such a respect for God that they wouldn't just boldly look upon him. It tells you that they got a hold of something. And all they could say, sometimes when it says that they said, holy, 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 I sometimes think, that was all they could say. There was nothing else to say. He is holy, and all you can do is repeat that. And so as we go through this life, we ought to sanctify him in such a way where we see him like that. Holy, holy, holy. And when you get a view of that, then those temptations won't mean much to you. You'll realize that my God is watching me, and I'm not going to make a misstep. You know, you've seen little children. I remember my oldest daughter, when she was crawling, she was going to do something. And I don't know, but she must have known it wasn't going to be the right thing to do. And she crawled a little ways, and you know, you're kind of watching her go. And then she stopped. And she turned around and looked at mama and father. And I guess she was trying to read our faces. I guess she decided she didn't see nothing, no frown, anything. And so she turned and started crawling on to where she was going. Now, we all knew where she was going before she got there. And finally she said, uh-uh. And she stopped and she looked back at you. And I guess she thought about it, and then she kept crawling, going on. Well, you know, people say you shouldn't spank her. But I tell you one thing I learned from my dad. I carried a rubber band around on my wrist. And when you see them getting ready to do something, you can come up behind them and you can take that rubber band and pop their hand. They know, okay, I need to get out of here because I'm getting in trouble. But you see, sometimes people, and I've read where some say people are trying to figure out, how much can I get by with and still be saved? Wrong equation, wrong thought process. We ought to live where we sanctify him in our lives, where we are fearful to do anything. So therefore, I'm not trying to see what can I get away with and still be saved. I'm trying to stay as far away from any of that as I can. I don't even want to be close to it. I want to turn and go the other way because I want him to be supreme in my life. May the Lord bless. Yeah.